Have you ever looked out at the world with all its difficulties, all its problems, all its needs, and asked yourself, what difference can I really make in all this mess? Can I have some kind of a positive impact? Does my influence matter at all? Some of us may have grown up thinking that we were going to change the world. Anybody think that way? In some kind of a capacity? I remember back when, before many of you were born, a man by the name of Kenny Rogers, he was kind of popular. Some people may have heard of him. He was a singer, songwriter. And in one song he put out in 1979 called She Believes in Me, he said, I told her someday if she was my girl, I could change the world with my little songs. I was wrong. As most people get older, they begin to realize that their impact on the world is going to be less than they thought. I was one of those people who thought that I was going to make some kind of an impact in some kind of way, half a dozen ways through the years. As the years and decades wore on, I began to realize I was going to have less and less impact. And now I begin to wish that I could have some kind of an impact on my closet. And so the more realistic that we get, and especially in our overpopulated, impersonal world, it's easy to underestimate our impact, to underestimate the significance of one person, one individual. With so many people, most of whom seem so much more capable, so much more gifted, so much more prosperous, or so much more important than I, who am I to think that my part amounts to that much? But when we find ourselves thinking that way, we need to be glad for those ordinary people who didn't allow themselves to think that way, didn't stifle their growth with that negativity. Somebody named Walt Disney would be such an individual. Winston Churchill, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., Thomas Alva Edison, Albert Einstein, Molly Pitcher, Louis Pasteur, Clara Barton Stone, Florence Nightingale. Many of these people had very humble beginnings, and some seemed to have very little potential at all. And what they did in some cases were less than remarkable, but the effects that it had, the influence that it had for future generations was quite remarkable indeed. It's easy to feel that what we say and what we do will have little impact on anyone. Some seem to take comfort in that thought, and they use it as an excuse. That is, well, the bad things I do hurt only me. I don't really have that much of an impact on anybody. But that's really just not the case. Every single individual has a lot of power, a lot of impact potential for good or for bad. And we're going to talk about that this morning. We're first going to consider the impact, the power of some individuals who chose to do what was right. Think about the power of one for good. A lot of instances, a lot of individuals we could think of in the Old Testament or the New Testament as well. I think of Jonah, for example. Don't really hear anything about Jonah in the Bible. We encounter him in the book of Jonah. There's one reference. I'll refer to it in a minute. But he just seems to pop up out of nowhere as you read through your Bible. A little four-chapter book near the back of the Old Testament. God speaks to him tells him to go to Nineveh. It says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish. Now, if you look at your Old Testament geography, you'll see immediately there's a problem. Tarshish is a seaport city that's going to take you to the west. Nineveh was to the northeast. And it says, he arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa. Joppa was the city, I'm sorry. Tarshish, the direction. Found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. So Tarshish was his goal. We recall what happens, and the focus is not really on what happens here, but how he was fleeing on the ship, and the Lord caused a great storm, and he was cast overboard and all that. But what we're wanting to look at is the impact that this one individual had as he finally agrees to do what the Lord instructed him to do down in Jonah chapter 3, beginning in verse 4. When he finally approaches the city, it says he began to enter the city on the first day's walk. He cried out and said, 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. For whatever reason, why he was given any credibility, for whatever reason, this made a huge impact on the people of this city. It says the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. Then the word of the, came to the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne and laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, let every one of you turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish? Then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. Now, I don't know what Jonah thought initially. I don't know if there's no indicator that he seemed to have this thought, well, what can I possibly do? There's nothing that indicates that. He, in fact, seems to indicate somewhat the opposite direction. I don't know his thoughts entirely, but unfortunately, he was more successful than he feared he was going to be. The impact of this one man to completely change this huge, powerful, wicked city. Quite a remarkable account. Think of a young man by the name of David, recorded for us in 1 Samuel chapter 17. An individual of probably no standing. His family really was not a prominent family. If he hadn't done this act and hadn't become what he'd become, he would have just been a normal guy out like doing normal things with nobody knowing who he was. We have this giant, the Philistines, this giant of the Philistines, Goliath of Gath, who, when the armies of the Philistia and the armies of Israel gathered together on mountains facing each other, hills facing each other, Goliath comes out and challenges the people, send me a man to fight. If he prevails against me, we'll be your slaves. If I prevail against him, you'll be our slaves. And this went on for some period of time, and David finally shows up to bring his brothers some food, and he hears this, and this one little guy says, we can't allow this. Who is he to defy the armies of the living God? You got all these trained soldiers standing here looking at this, and seems none of them had this. If they did, they kept it to themselves. What could I possibly do? David didn't think that way. What could this one little shepherd boy do besides change the course of Israel's history forever? God saw to it that the kings on the throne in Jerusalem after David were descendants of David. This one small, insignificant shepherd boy, and God said the Messiah would come through his seed. What about a woman by the name of Esther? It was around 475 BC, and a group of the Jews who were in exile were in Persia. Esther was there among them in the capital city of Susa. The Jews, as the story unfolds in the little book of Esther, were about to be exterminated. But something changed that. Something brought that to a halt. Was it the royal army of Israel? Was it the descendants of maybe 1,000 descendants of the mighty men of David? No, it was one woman. Now you have to acknowledge the contribution of Mordecai there. One man spoke to this one woman and said, if you remain silent at this time, you and your father's house will perish. She could have said, what difference can I make? He could have said, what difference can I make? Obviously, it made a difference, quite a significant difference. But somebody says, well, you keep referring to famous people, people who had great power, great influence because of their position in life. What about the common person? Some people think, well, Jonah was pretty common. Well, we do have one reference that I alluded to earlier in 2 Kings chapter 14 in the reign of Jeroboam II of Israel around 775 BC. We're told that Jeroboam accomplished certain things according to the word of the Lord spoken through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was from Gath-Hepher. So Jonah was apparently more prominent than we might think. So what about this idea? These are prominent people. Prominent people do prominent things, right? They do things that stand out. Well, what about the widow in Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44? We're told there, Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in 2 mites, which makes a quadrants, which is like 1/128 of a drachma, one day's pay. So he called his disciples to himself and said, assuredly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury. For they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. I doubt that anybody else that day at the temple noticed that lady. If they did, they may have noticed her in kind of a negative way. I'm inclined to think the apostles would not have paid any attention to her if Jesus hadn't called attention to her himself. We don't know the name of this woman. We know nothing about her other than those few words that are spoken about her. Yet she's been spoken of. She's been the topic of sermons for 2,000 years. And the small thing that she did, I'm sure she never thought anything of it and thought perhaps if you had asked her, well, who am I? I'll never make an impact on anybody. What about the sinful woman at the house of Simon the Pharisee in Luke chapter 7, verses 36 and following, if you want to make the reference there? She anointed Jesus' feet with oil. Jesus talks to Simon about her and makes some applications there. Many sermons have been preached on this topic as well. Don't know her name. Don't really know anything else about her. But the love she exhibited, the sorrow, the humility for her sins, the forgiveness that was extended to her. John chapter 4, hate to keep picking on women, but this is in a positive way, hopefully. Samaritan woman at the well. No doubt she would have thought, I will never have an impact on anybody except for perhaps a negative impact. And yet, she was responsible for the whole town being made aware of, being introduced to, coming into contact with Jesus. And then you take the negative approach and think of the power of one for bad. Consider the power, the influence of many of the wicked kings of Judah and Israel, and you got plenty to choose from. How they led Israel into sin, into idolatry. This is just a handful. Jeroboam, Omri, the father of Ahab, Abijam, Nadab, Baasha. You could also throw in some New Testament individuals, Judas Iscariot. The list could go on. Some of these names are notoriously associated with evil, pretty much to the degree that they're actually synonyms for wickedness. How many times you read the statement, he walked in the sins or in the way of Jeroboam, son of Nebat? Unfortunately, there are many instances in history, many instances that you can see, witness, be made aware of. Very contemporary. Happens all the time. Many instances of one person changing somebody else's life forever in a horrific way. Or more than one person's life forever. You can think of the terror attacks that are happening so frequently. Think of the Elizabeth Smart story. 14 years old, taken in the middle of the night, rescued 9 months later. I was trying to think of the other case, didn't remember the name of a 15-year-old girl who was abducted by her teacher. Tried to look that up, hit several instances of 15-year-old girls in the past couple of months, taken by somebody. Contrast that with John Wesley, for example, who is said to have ridden 20 miles a day for 40 years on horseback, preached over 40,000 sermons, wrote 400 books. About 100 years later, an English nobleman traveling through the countryside stopped to ask a peasant, "Why is it that I cannot find a place to buy a drink of liquor, which would be better off, I guess. Why is it that I cannot find a place to buy a drink of liquor in this wretched village?" The peasant replied, "Well, you see, my lord, about 100 years ago, a man named John Wesley came preaching in these parts." There's your answer. And you may say, well, that's all well and good, but how can my life make any difference? I'm just an ordinary person. You may never be on the cover of a magazine. You may never be on TV. But you can make a difference. Somebody may be in heaven right now because of you. Somebody may end up going to heaven one day because of you. You may not be able to change the world, but you can change the lives of people in your sphere of influence. Consider the power that you have in the home. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, you may live long on the earth. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Think of the influence that you have, the power of your example to your children, the power of a consistent love for God and devotion to Him and to His will. One bad deed done by a family member can bring disastrous effects for years, and even for generations, in fact. In Exodus chapter 20, that beginning of the chapter there that records the Ten Commands, in the midst of those, verses 4 through 6, says, "You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commands." You can think of numerous cases throughout Scripture. One that comes to mind is that of Ammon and Tamar, and how he raped his half-sister. And you think of the effects that this has had upon people. 2 years later, he himself was murdered by his brother because of that very thing. And that doesn't even address the impact that this had on Tamar for the rest of her life. If you try to downplay your influence as a parent, try thinking about the influence that your parents have had on you. I read decades ago that it takes 10 years after a child leaves home before they truly separate from their parents. Now, this is a psychologist, I think, so you can take that for what it's worth. But there's probably a lot of truth to that. I can remember years and years after I left home, still experiences, going places, doing things. One of the first things I would think of was how my dad would act, or what he would say. And of course, these days when people are still living at home at 35 and 40, I don't know if that's ever going to, they're ever going to leave that influence, but our parents obviously have a huge impact. Consider the power you have in the home regarding your spouse. Ephesians 5, 22 through 30, well-known passage. "Wives, submit to your husbands as the Lord, for the husband is head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, is the Savior of the body. Just as the church is subject to Christ, let their wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church, gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church, for we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones." 1 Peter 3, 1 through 7, "Wives, be submissive to your husbands, even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing a gold, or putting on a fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God." He goes on to say in verse 7, Husbands, likewise, dwell with your wives with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Refuse to follow these injunctions. Refuse to submit to these teachings. And consider the impact that it will have on your children. Wives who simply will not submit to the husband. Wives who will live a life that's not exemplary. Husbands who treat their wives with disdain. Don't honor her. Don't cherish her. Don't treat her with respect. Not only does it have a huge impact on the person that you're supposed to love and care for, but the children certainly see it, and it has an impact on them for decades, for generations even, as it continues to follow through. What about your impact on the job? There are a lot of people, I say a lot, don't know the numbers, but I've known specifically of people who have been won to Christ, many more who've been influenced in a positive way by seeing the godly example of a person day in and day out on the job. Being honest, always trying to do the right thing, being considerate of others, apologizing for mistakes and maybe behaviors that you shouldn't have participated in. It can be easy to underestimate the power of one person's example in such instances. So many people think, well, nobody's watching me, nobody's paying attention to me. And of course, these points apply to being at school. They apply to situation in the neighborhood, those around you, those that you encounter. Matthew chapter 5, that was read earlier, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. You know, you may be the only one, you may be the only person who will have a godly influence in the lives of certain people. There are certain people that you know, certain people maybe that you work with, certain people that you live near or are around on some kind of a regular basis who may never encounter another person who knows the true gospel. There's a Chinese legend about a group of elderly cultured gentlemen who met often to exchange wisdom and drink tea together. And each host tried to find the finest and most costly varieties of tea to create exotic blends that would arouse the admiration of his guests. When the most venerable and respected of this group took his turn, he served his tea with unprecedented ceremony, measuring the leaves from a golden box. The assembled men praised this exquisite tea. The host smiled and said, what you found to be so delightful is the same tea that our peasants drink. I hope it'll be a reminder to all that the good things in life are not necessarily the rarest or the most costly. In fact, it's just the ordinary. From an unknown source, someone said, "My life shall touch a dozen lives before this day is done. Leave countless marks for good or ill before the setting of the sun. This is the wish I always wish, the prayer I always pray. Lord, may my life help other lives it touches by the way." You can make a difference in people's, you will make a difference in people's lives. We need to make sure it's for the good and the lives of those we meet. I read these pieces of information. If they're somehow a glitch in there somewhere, don't blame it on me. Blame it on the source. In 1776, one vote, I read, gave America the English language instead of German. Thing on that, Christ. 1875, one vote changed France from a monarchy to a republic. 1941, one vote saved the Selective Service System, the draft, just 12 weeks before Pearl Harbor was attacked. 1923, one vote gave Adolf Hitler control of the Nazi Party. Never underestimate the power of one. A man by the name of Edward Everett Hale said, "I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." And then what about the power of one man, Jesus Christ? Hebrews chapter 10, verses 11 through 14 says that every priest stands ministering daily, offering repeatedly the same sacrifices, which can never take away sins. But this man, this one man, contrasted with those many priests, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down at the right hand of God, from that time waiting till his enemies are made his footstool. For by one offering he has perfected forever those who are being sanctified. Let's stand together and sing the song that's been chosen.